story of Doomdark's revenge. The Icemark Chronicles, Chapter 1. Peace.
The deep shadows of the forest wrapped the girl in long gowns of grey, and she slipped through the twilight like a wraith, swiftly, silently trailing between the colonnades of trees. Far from the clamour of the city she wandered, letting the forest lead her down its secret ways, letting her mind mingle with the slow and ancient thoughts of the dreaming trees, to catch glimpses of midnight's long-forgotten summer, the birth pangs of its green dawn, and the dark dance of death-augering autumn. Gradually, her pace slackened, as if the rhythm of the forest had seized her lithe limbs and urged a gentle emotion upon them, until she halted at last in a deep glade. There she stood, flanked by tall towers of green, waiting and watching, just as the forest had waited and watched down the long ages. Gently she swayed, a young sapling in the midst of its elders, till softly the dew gathered like stars in her sweeping tresses, and bedecked her green cloak with glistening jewels. The boy rode past her like a ghost, unmoving, unseeing. Tarathel called out to him, but he did not turn. Then, suddenly struck with fear for him, she whispered a strange, wordless song, swift of rhythm yet slow at heart, and as clear and broad of melody as the wind rushing through the tall grasses of the open plains. The boy's horse lifted its head, turned and cantered up to her, nuzzling into her cloak as it stopped beside her. The boy himself stirred too, and turned his puzzled eyes upon her. She saw him then as the moonlight struck down through the trees and bruised his face with its stark brilliance, lost in desolation. His eyes were as cold as death, his mouth a thin scar frozen on a face of stone. Yet Tarathel seemed to see behind this mask and sense a greeting in his icy gaze, a hint of laughter even in his barren eyes. She smiled warmly.
I bid you welcome, sir, to the Forest of Dreams. Will you not tarry a while? 'Tis a long and lonely road you follow.
I follow no road. I simply ride. I go where my horse takes me, but if he has led me here, then I should be grateful. For fairer vision than thee I have never seen.
Come, let us find shelter. The night grows long and cold.
Then you must ride with me. I cannot ride and have you walk.
And can you not walk?
I can, but I would rather we rode together.
With a nimbleness that surprised him, Tarathel took two swift steps, grasped his arm and leapt up behind him onto the horse. Wrapping her warm arms around his waist, she brought her mouth close to his ear and whispered,
"The path to the left, gallant knight."
It was but a few minutes before they broke out of the forest again, and saw before them the Citadel of Dreams, its high towers glimmering like amber in the glow of a thousand torches, its sheer walls bright with the banners of the Fae and the Free, its great gates decked with flags and lanterns. Before it lay another city of tents and pavilions that shivered and shimmered as the air trembled in the heat of bonfires that bejeweled the dark plain. The boy reined in his stallion and gazed in awe.
What is this place? Why this carnival? How can they?
Tarathel thought the boy's muscles stiffen and began to tremble. His growing fury was unmistakable.
How can they do what?
How can they rejoice? How can they rejoice?
This is the Citadel of Dreams, stronghold of the Fae, Imlath Quirinial, Jewel of Midnight. Before you lie the armies of Luxor, the Moon Prince, bearer of the Moon Ring, the Warring of the House of the Moon. They have journeyed here from the gates of Ushgarak itself. They rejoice, surely this much you know, because Doomdark is defeated, slain by the sword of Prince Luxar himself.
The boy slumped forward, buried his face in the stallion's long mane and began to sob uncontrollably. In the midst of the courtyard stood a green oak. Lamps flickered in every branch, casting dancing rainbows on the worn cobbles under its vaulting canopy. Beyond, a fountain tumbled molten silver into a shivering pool, and further still, on the plinth of marble, blazed a bowl of green and golden fire that sent a trembling mist of light and warmth throughout the stillness. The peace of the courtyard seemed to fall upon the boy, and his sobbing slackened. He slid down from his horse, letting Tarathel take his hand, letting her lead him to the side of the fountain pool, then letting himself down to rest beside her on the sitting stones by its bank. Tarathel wrapped her arms around him and hugged him tightly, as though he were a small child who had grazed his knee. Gradually, his sobbing ebbed away.
Tell me what ails thee.
I thought he was dead. I thought the war was lost and midnight doomed. Rejoicing, I thought they were rejoicing for Doomdark's victory. I thought I'd found it and destroyed it all in vain. Too late to help. Too late for anything. I don't know where I've been since. What did it matter? If the foul one had won, nothing mattered anymore. Everything would be wilderness. Why bother finding haven? There would be no haven. There would be no peace. There would be no warmth. Ever. I thought he was dead, but he lives.
Who did you think was dead? What did you destroy? You talk in riddles that I cannot fathom.
When I cast it into the lake, it shrieked and screamed as it dropped towards the water. Even the air about it seemed to thicken, as though the thing was trying to save itself by freezing the very wind. It fell so slowly, like a knife dropped in syrup. I thought it might stop. Then, when it touched the water, came a crack of thunder as it shattered and flew apart. Suddenly, the lake erupted with boiling clouds of steam that caught and melted the fragments even as it burst asunder. I leapt and danced for joy. It was gone forever. The task was done. It was over. Then, as the lake stilled and the clouds of steam thinned away to nothing, a rolling peal of laughter boomed from the north, and an icy, yet velvet voice spoke to me. Fool, it said. You are too late, you puny child. Luxor is dead. His mighty armies are maggot fodder now. Zajokith has fallen and burns even now. Coralie has been ravaged, and every man and woman and child put to the sword, if they were lucky. The Fae fawn at my feet, and all you have done is me a favor. It is so tiresome having to dispose of obsolete possessions. Then the laughter rolled again and slowly dwindled away. For days, perhaps moons since, I have wandered aimlessly. There was no point after that, no point at all.
What did you destroy?
Why, the ice crown, of course.
That is the sweetest answer I have ever heard. Why, the ice crown, of course. A mere bauble, a deed of no more consequence than casting away an old cloak. You must be Morkin, then, son of the Moon Prince.
Yes, I am Morkin, but your name I know not.
I am Tarithel, the daughter of the Lord of Dreams and Lady of the Forest.
Morkin looked up slowly and fixed his eyes upon hers. Blindly, their hands touched and twined. Morkin seemed to melt inside as he felt the warmth of her slender hands seeking and finding his, and Tarithel felt a fresh, cool wind blow through her as his firm but yielding grasp closed upon hers, and slowly, like two branches bending towards the same brilliant light, they drew closer together, until their lips touched in the gentlest of kisses, to part swiftly, as though each had brushed a candle flame. They looked at each other, bewildered by themselves. Then, suddenly overwhelmed by longing and delight, Morkin took Tarithel in his arms, crushing his lips against hers. They clung to each other tightly, and as they kissed, they seemed to become one fire, one flame burning in the cold, clear light. And then Tarithel led Morkin, and took him along the winding corridors to the Western Tower.
Chapter 2. The Frozen Empire.
Shareth, the Hearthstealer, Empress of the Icemark, Thread Ruler of the Frozen Empire, was distraught. None but the wise knew that Dumdark, in earlier moons, had himself journeyed through the northern wilderness and found the ice-locked land of Icemark. And few even of them knew that there, in brief union with the cold queen of the north, he had spawned a daughter. She was called Shareth, and was perhaps the only thing that Dumdark had ever loved. The Witch King left her in Icemark for her own safety, fearing that some would seek to use her against him, but his long, roving vision kept watch over her. As she grew and matured in evil under Dumdark's distant tutelage, she gathered about her the trappings of power, and came to rule a kingdom of anything more foul than his. When she learned of Dumdark's death at the hand of Luxor, she was not stricken with grief, for grief was beyond her. Her consuming fury sprang from other sources. Someone had dared to touch her father, had dared to challenge and destroy her flesh and blood. To Shareth, it was almost beyond belief that a pitiful Prince of the Free had the temerity to take pleasure from her. So long had she planned in gruesome detail the murder of the Witch King and the seizure of his domains. Dumdark had tutored her too well in his own ways for her to feel anything but delight at the thought of disposing of one whose power outweighed hers. The insistent ache for power and dominion burst to sharp pain when she learned that the Moon Prince now ruled Midnight. Midnight was hers, though Dumdark might not have planned it so, believing foolishly that his only daughter loved him in return, and crying out even with his dying breath,
"Avenge me, Shareth! Avenge me!"
She was about to wreak a terrible revenge upon the Free and their Moon Prince. Shareth raised her long arms to the sky and cried into the wind, uttering words no man could understand. The storm, however, seemed to leap and swirl as her strident voice pierced through the air. Across the Frozen Empire, from Fangorn to Imriel, the dark sky became a boiling turmoil. Then, as Shareth shrieked, the great storm gathered itself and sped southwards towards the Icemark. Shareth turned. The anger of these past hours had brought a rare flush to her cheeks.
I am so beautiful. I will make the whole world love me.
She approached one of her mirrors closely, blowing a soft mist of breath onto its polished surface.
Your hair is like an eagle's nest, my love, and your nose is as cold as a mountain.
Night fell swiftly upon the ice mark, hastened by the storm that flew from the north. From the great city of Varangrim, a motley battalion of giants gathered swiftly together at the approach of the storm clouds, and marched towards the borders of the frozen empire, hoping to forestall the onslaught that such foul weather was apt to carry in its wake. Likewise, from Carudrium and Carothay, the dwarves sent forth their warriors towards Fangorn to challenge, if needs be, the marauding ice guard. Further south, in the city of Imothorn, the lords of the Fae met in council to discuss the import of the great tumult in the sky. Some were for raising the alarm at once and marching on Figarac and Glormain, fearing that the dwarves had betrayed them to the Heartstealer. Others were waiting, reasoning that even if the dwarves had betrayed them, it would be better to fight the ice guard in the deep and tangled forests than to march forth onto the open plains. The Lord of Imothorn, however, was adamant that the storm was destined for other lands.
You will have heard by now, surely, my lords, of the war which has been raging in the lost land of Midnight, far, far to the southwest of our ice mark. Though it is now 2 moons since its conclusion, the news of the Moon Prince's victory has travelled slowly. Rumours of a secret traffic between the Heartstealer and the Witch King have come to our ears for many moons now. Indeed, on the eve of the solstice itself, did we not waylay a band of dark and foul warriors riding north from the gate of Varinon? I know it is many, many moons since any of our number has dared its terrors, but that is the only passage we know of that still leads to Midnight. I am sure the Heartstealer sends the storm not against us, but against this Gluxor, this fabled Moon Prince of Midnight. Look, even now the storm turns southwest.
The Lord of Imothorn raised his arm and pointed to the tall windows of the hall. The council turned and looked out at the dark flying clouds. There was a murmur of agreement, and then confusion as they argued as to what they should do if this was indeed the truth of the matter. At length they agreed that their brothers in the land of Midnight, the Fae of the legendary Forest of Dreams, and other forests now long forgotten, must be warned of the peril that approached them. Meanwhile, they should make ready for war, for there was no foreseeing Shareth's plans. If she had designs upon Midnight, the route of her armies might well pass through the kingdoms of the Fae, and there was small hope that such a passage would be peaceable. Accordingly, as the night deepened, the Lord of Imothorn climbed to the Tower of Hawks, and took his swiftest bird, a white falcon, from the mews. Round one of its jesses he wrapped a thin strip of parchment, fastened it there with hot wax, and pressed his seal upon it. Then, unhooding the falcon, he spoke softly to it, and lofted it into the turbulent sky. In a moment it was gone, winging its way towards Midnight and the Citadel of Dreams.
Chapter 3. The Court of the Moon Prince.
Tarithel and Morkin tarried long in the warmth of each other's company, before they rose to meet the day. Then, side by side, they rode out through the Gate of Dreams towards the pavilions of Luxor and his lords. The crowds of soldiers and townsfolk parted, with a flurry of whispers and questions, and closed in again behind them, staring in wonderment. The whole assembly turned as they entered, and the Moon Prince leapt to his feet, recognizing the boy. His countenance lightened and filled with joy. He flung his arms out high and wide.
"Rise, my lords, my son has returned. Morkin, my boy, others would return haggard and drained from such a quest as yours, but you have thrived."
"Father, once I thought never to see you again, but you have won the great victory and stand before me alive and well."
"This is the boy who saved Ered Ashgarak, who, as we fought our bloody way through hordes of foul creatures to the gates of the Witch King's palace and felt his cold breath clawing at our strength and our courage, smashed the heart of his dread power and lifted the burden of the Ice Crown's terror from us. Salute him, my lords, though mine was the sword which plunged into the foul one's heart. This is truly the hand that slew him. My son, I would thank thee for simply being still alive, but now we all have cause to give thee our thanks. If there is a gift that lies in my power to grant, name it, and it shall be yours."
"Father, do not praise me so. The victory was yours. You slew the Witch King. Your armies took Ashgarak. Your skill and your vigor brought him to his knees."
"Your part was as much. More. Do you imagine we could have succeeded without you? I speak not now as your father, Morkin, but as Moon Prince of Midnight. Name your wish. The Lords of Midnight will not countenance your refusal."
"I fear it is not yours to grant, my lord."
"How so? Tell me your desire."
"The hand tomorrow of this fair maiden who stands beside me, Tarithel, Lady of the Forest of Dreams. That is my wish, father."
Morkin looked up steadily into the eyes of the Moon Prince, as if daring him to say aught against his ambition. Amongst the assembled lords there were more than a few swiftly stifled guffaws, and the company was suddenly beset by an outbreak of coughing and clearing of throats. Luxor stayed impassive, as if he had not heard the words his son had uttered. Then Morkin turned to Tarithel, and Tarithel turned to him. The smiles that passed between them left no doubt as to the candor of the boy's resolve. Stiffly, the Lord of Dreams rose to his feet and began to speak.
This is my only daughter who stands before you. Her hand may not be yours to give, but if she wills it, I would give it gladly to your son.
I do, Father, I do.
Then let this be a token that the Fae and the Free are now as one under the protection of the House of the Moon. My consent is given.
Your wish seems granted, Morkin. And a fairer daughter I could not hope for. Yet you are both so young. Think upon it, both of you, before you tie a knot that all of time cannot undo.
We have, my lord.
What can I do, my lords? I have given my word. So it shall be. On the morrow you shall wed. All that remains now is to celebrate this happy, unlooked-for moment. Come, sit with me, and we will talk of the things that have passed before this new feast begins. A feast this night of love, not war.
Many tales were told that day, many battles fought again by tongue. Luxor's high council, summoned to decide the fate of Doomdark's old dominions, put aside its purpose and fell to reminiscing. The mead flowed, brave deeds grew braver, terrors waxed more terrible yet, and the day drew slowly on. Yet, before evening fell, a strange event came to pass. A white falcon flew in through the open doorway of the pavilion, circled thrice above the high table, then came to rest on the shoulder of the Lord of Dreams. As the rest of the company stared in amazement at the bird, Tarithel reached a gentle hand toward it and nimbly untied its jesses. Then, at a soft word from her, it took flight again and disappeared from the pavilion. Tarithel handed the message attached to the leather thong to her father. He puzzled at the seal for a moment, then broke it apart to unravel the parchments. The ancient fey runes he found there surprised him. His skill in them had not been lost, but it was many moons since he had needed to use it. He read the message slowly and carefully before turning to Luxor. His expression was a mixture of astonishment and concern.
My lord Moon Prince, this message hails from lands beyond our ken, from the cold ice mark which has been severed from midnight for 1,000 moons and more. A lord who calls himself Immerthorn writes it, addressing himself to his brothers, Fae of the Forest of Dreams. It warns of a great storm flying from the north towards midnight, and of the evil designs of one he calls the Heartstealer upon our fair land. He also calls her Empress of the Frozen Empire, and hints that she may have made some pact with the Witch King before his demise. I know not what to make of it, but one thing is certain. It was indeed written by the hand of a Fae. The ancient runes are known to few of us, and none, to be sure, of others.
If this message bears the truth, then it seems our long struggle is not over yet. But surely this Immerthorn cannot be right. The frozen wastes lie between us and the lost land of Icemark. Why else was a falcon sent to bear these ill tidings to us? I cannot see how any empress of the north, however evil her intent, can threaten the peace that now befalls midnight. The wastes would destroy armies 1,000 times stronger than Doomdark's before they ever reached our borders. As for warning of a storm, should we sharpen our swords, wax our bowstrings, and prepare to do battle against the wind and snow? This message makes no sense. My friend, see what more you can discover of this matter. Though I cannot see how, I fear this message is more timely than we can imagine.
Chapter 4. The Storm Breaks.
A dark and starless night fell upon the Forest of Dreams, as high overhead the vanguard of Shaddath's storm gathered. Long past midnight the feasting finished, and the two cities of stone and of cloth fell silent under the lightless sky. Though the parting would be brief, and tomorrow he would be joined forever with Tarithel, Morkin could not sleep. He wandered restlessly around the encampment, pausing at the dying campfires to gaze into the embers and wonder what the future held for him and his beloved Tarithel. An urge suddenly betook him to see once more the sweet glade where Tarithel had found him. In a few minutes Morkin was on his horse and riding slowly through the blackness of the forest, his way lit only by memory. Whether it was Morkin or the stallion who truly found it is difficult to say, but eventually he emerged into the broad clearing, where the snow glowed on the frozen ground like a pale, phosphorescent pool. The stallion walked to the heart of the glade, and waited there while the boy peered around himself, trying to conjure out of the darkness his meeting with Tarithel. The stallion suddenly reared, throwing Morkin into the snow, then rushed off into the darkness. Stunned and half-blinded, the boy clambered to his feet to go in search of his terrified steed. Lightning struck down ahead of him, so close that he could feel its heat on his face, feel his skin tingle and tremble as his power crackled through the air about him. And then the storm loosed off bolt after bolt after bolt, until the boy was trapped in a circle of raging incandescent fire. So fierce was the raw power that danced around the boy that his very muscles seized and locked. Hopelessly frozen there by the lightning, he could only stare into its blinding blue flame until consciousness fled him. Morkin lay unmoving, wrapped in strange dreams. A woman stood before him, beckoning gently. Somehow he knew he was hopelessly in love with her. As she stood there, smiling, radiant in her beauty, he ran towards her open arms, yet he seemed to draw no closer. Her deep crystal eyes mocked him. "You must run more swiftly to catch me, my love," she seemed to say. "You must run more swiftly." As he ran, the ground gave way beneath him, and he began to tumble down a dark chasm. The wind rushed swiftly past him, and he seemed to fall for hours before he saw a tiny point of light glimmering in the yawning space beneath him. The point grew and grew as he fell, until it became a room into which he was falling from the dark and open sky. Upon a silk-strewn bed lay the woman who had beckoned him, her sheer and perfect beauty now naked to his enraptured eyes. But as he tumbled, an invisible hand seemed to reach out and slow his downward flight, until he hovered above the sleeping figure, almost able to reach out and touch her, but not quite. So the dream ran on, the woman who had beckoned appearing again and again, each time her beauty more ravishing and voluptuous than before, each time the boy seeming to move inexorably towards her open embrace, but never completing that final distance. Morkin woke with no memory of the night that had passed. His mind felt blank and numb. A tall stallion nuzzled him as he lay in the cold snow. Trees that were high, bare and broken enclosed him, but beyond that the boy knew naught. Only a single urgent thought filled his mind. "North," it whispered, "north. You must ride swifter than the wind." In a daze, he hauled himself onto the stallion's saddle. He looked around himself bemused, then, shaking off the last shackles of sleep, urged the horse forward. Northward they galloped, and were quickly lost in the deep tangle of trees.
Chapter 5. The Gate of Varanorn.
Morkin was not seen again. No word of him was heard, no trace of him could be found. 3 days later, Carathel disappeared as well, taking with her one of her father's swiftest mounts. The Moon Prince dispatched messengers far and wide, but of the fate of Morkin or Carathel not a whisper returned. The armies camped beneath the battlements of the Citadel of Dreams, dispersed and wound their way southwards to home and hearth and kin. Only Luxor remained, with 1,000 riders of his houseguard waiting for news. For 3 moons none came, then out of the north rode Rothron the Wise, bearing ill tidings. When news of the boy's disappearance had reached him, he had ridden to the broken city of Ashgarak, and then west across the plains of despair, to the Tower of Doom itself, hoping to find some clue to Morkin's fate. In Ashgarak he had found nothing, but at the tower he had unearthed a letter addressing itself to "My dearest father Doomlark, Witch King of Midnight," and signed "Your ever-loving Sharath of the Frozen Empire." His suspicions roused, Rothron had turned his far-reaching vision northwards, across the frozen waste to the land of Icemark. But he could not penetrate further than the southern borders of a grey and desolate domain he imagined must be the empire spoken of. Sharath, it seemed, had powers too. In the swirling mists of the grey borders, she conjured up an image of herself, radiant with cold and piercing beauty. She challenged him fiercely to try his powers further, and when he refused, she laughed scornfully.
"You are all so pathetic. Soon I will have you all in my power. Tell this to your precious Moon Prince. I have his son in my grasp already. The boy is mad with love for me and lies at this very moment locked in one of my less pleasant dungeons, pining piteously for my embraces. When I am ready, I shall set him at the head of my armies and send him back to Midnight to shatter the peace you snivellers are so fond of. 7 moons from now, I, Sharath, Empress of the Icemark, will ride forth to avenge Doomdark, my beloved father. The frozen gates I shall tear down, Midnight I shall lay waste, and through the portals of the Jorkith I will pass triumphant. All shall adore me in despair, or if the Moon Prince prefers, let him ride to hammer at my door and find defeat more swiftly."
Hearing that Sharath's words were not an idle boast, Rothron had ridden east with all haste, and came at last to the Tower of Lorgrim. There he learnt that the frozen gates had cracked open at the last new moon. A lonely figure riding northwards had plunged into the dark caverns between the barrier ice before a sudden, thunderous icefall had closed the gates once more. Rothron tarried no longer, but sped south to the Forest of Dreams. And to Luxor, everything now grew clear. The strange warning of the White Falcon, the murderous storm that heralded the disappearance of Morkin, even Tarathel's sudden absence so soon after the first vanishing. She had surely guessed Morkin's peril, as surely as she divined the slow, sombrous songs of the dreaming trees. Though doubtless many leagues behind, she would have followed, listening for the distant whispering of his bewitched and troubled dreams. The Moon Prince hardly paused before deciding upon the course of action that he must take. Northwards at once they must ride. Any delay would only serve to allow Shareth time to gather her power more fully. Against failure, the Lord of Dreams would remain in Midnight, to marshal the Fae and free. But Rothron would ride with the Moon Prince to the Frozen Gates. Swiftness was the watchword, to strike at the Empress while she felt safe and secure. Before the hour had passed, the riders of the House Guard of the Moon thundered north towards Lothrim, with Luxor and Rothron at their head. Banners swirling, helms and spears gleaming in the clear noon sun. They swept through the Forest of Dreams like a torrent. They rode without pause, passing Drunhenge at midnight, reaching the plains of Phanthras by next morning. Never had an army ridden so swiftly. By nightfall of that day, the Tower of Lothlin rose before them, flanked by the grim wilderness of the icy wastes. Only at the foot of the Frozen Gates did they come to a halt. The jagged ridge of ice gleamed blood-red as the westering sun cast its fading brilliance on the cold towers and barren pinnacles. The gates themselves, black and cavernous mouths that led to secret ways beneath the glacial ice, were closed, blocked by mountainous shards that had toppled from the ice ridge above. Few hearts did not quail, but Rothron, seizing his staff in his right hand, galloped forward and charged at the great bergs that stood before them. As he rode, his deep voice boomed out across the wilderness, quelling the insistent wails of north wind and echoing back in a thousand fragments from the endless wall of ice. His words held no meaning for those who heard them, but all could sense they were words of power. The army waited breathlessly for fire to leap forth from his staff. No such spectacle ensued. Instead, the ice seemed to turn to molten glass and sink back into precipitous space at the barrier ridge, parting like a curtain as it slithered backwards. Suddenly, the jaws of the frozen gates were revealed, and Rothron, now a mere speck in the distance, rushed into the throat of their age-long darkness. The Moon Prince and his riders cheered and sprang forward after him. Swiftly, the darkness swallowed them there, and in the mouth of a broad tunnel they paused to look one more time upon the fair land of midnight. Rothron's commanding voice spurred them to swift motion again.
Ride swiftly, my friends, ride swiftly. The spell will not hold. If we tarry, the gates will come crashing down upon us.
Now at last his staff burst forth with fire, and Rothron launched himself into the black depths beyond like a blazing comet. The Moon Prince and his riders galloped after the fleeing light with as much speed as they could muster. The crack and thunder of exploding ice that followed them as they rode left no doubt in their minds as to the truth of Rothron's words. Though soon safe in the bowels of the earth, the cohorts of the Moon Prince pressed on with all speed. The last road to the ice mark was dank and malodorous, broken, slithery, and pitted. Curses and oaths filled the rank air. Tired beyond mere exhaustion, none wished to pause. Finally, after many hours of dark passage, the army emerged into the clear night of the ice mark. Luxor turned and looked up at the deserted towers and walls of the Gate of Varanorn, guarding the northern entrance of the road to midnight. He smiled.
It seems our haste has not been in vain, Rothron. The witch looks not to guard herself against us.
Perhaps, my Lord Moon Prince, perhaps. Or perhaps she has simply left the door of the coop open to entice a fox. It was your hand that slew Doomdark. It will be your death she desires more than anything. Even though she lusts after all of midnight.
If I fail, so be it. The safety of my son is paramount.
If you fall, Luxor, so will midnight. Creatures such as Shareth feed on their own success and quaff the power of their victims. She will be unassailable, I fear, if her vengeance is assuaged.
Then do you advise me against this course, Rothrock?
No, my friend. The boy must be rescued. 'Twould be unthinkable to leave him in such foul hands. Even were it not that the Heartstealer has the power to twist him and use him against the land of his birth. We are caught in a cleft stick, I fear.
Rothron, we must strike at the source of her power, at her stronghold, wherever that may lie. I have no doubt you speak truly, yet our arrogance may still be used against her. If she expects anything, she will expect us to attempt no more than a rescue before fleeing from the ice mark. Let us instead strike at the vitals of her cold empire. While Doomdark's daughter still lives, midnight will remain in mortal peril. Let us rid ourselves of this pestilence in a single stroke.
Indeed, my lord, I see no other way. Nothing would more imperil Morkin's life than an army hammering at the gates of his prison. But come, we must all rest before the day breaks. We are strangers in this land and may be forced to follow unforeseen paths before we win through. We must find friends as well as enemies.
When dawn broke, the Moon Prince mounted his charger. He took once more the moon ring, last of midnight's great rings of war, and slipped it on his finger, where it had not rested since the slaughter of Doomdark. Then he lofted his hand to the sky, the moon ring blazing there like a fragment of the rising sun. As its glad power shone out, a rousing cheer came from the long ranks of riders.
For midnight and the free! Hear me, Sharath Heartstealer, we ride to tear the frozen empire asunder!
Rothron whirled his staff about his head, flinging a storm of golden fire into the chill air. The trumpets of the heralds blew a proud fanfare, and the cohorts of the Moon Prince rode forth from the gate of Varanorn into the Ice Mark. Far away, in a deep and dreamless forest, Tanithel reined in her horse and paused, listening with her mind to the whisper of hope that rippled through the morning mists. The Moon Ring is unveiled, she thought to herself. The Moon Prince rides. She too had travelled the dark road that led from midnight to the gate of Varanorn, searching for many days along the ridge of the frozen gates before finding a crevice that would let her through. Now, with all hope of finding Morkin's trail lost, she was journeying towards rumours of the city of Immerthorn, in search for any scrap of news, in search of any person who might remember his passing. And though she had seen the new moon turn to full and wane again, she had found no trace of him. Despair had worked its way with her, and she rebuked herself constantly for keeping her fears to herself when she rode off in pursuit of Morkin, even though at that time those fears had been so vague and formless that she could not have put a word to them. Only when it was too late to turn back for help did she realize the immensity of her task and feel the cold, implacable power of the Heartstealer's dreams. The thought now that midnight was roused and that its mighty lords marched upon the frozen empire warmed her like a fire. She put aside her doubts and despair.
Morkin, I will find thee, my love. No ice, no storm, no sword or shaft shall keep me from thy side. No hag witch's twisted dream shall come between us. Let her fling 1,000 foul armies in my path. Still I will find thee.
Tarithel rode on towards Immerthorn. The webs of time shook softly, and a shiver trembled across the land of Icemark. Many tears were about to be shed, much blood to be spilt. The wind howled.